Thank you, Ed. You know, my South Carolina grandmother thought of Memphis as the Northwest. And to mark the Philadelphia Society's presence here in the Northwestern capital of Southern culture, I've invited a whole table of my Memphis relatives, the Ernest Meller family, including my mother's sister, Lala. They think the way we do. My mother would have loved to have been here for the same reason. She's so conservative, my mother, that she's against discussion. This started when my sister came home from college questioning the virgin birth. The discussion only lasted 30 seconds before reverting to the status quo ante, but that was 30 seconds too long for my mother. In fact, the only discussion that was allowed in our house in those days was when Dan Rather came on the evening news, and from anywhere in the house you could hear my mother shouting, "Jackass!" It's so good to be here with Brad Reynolds tonight. I never had a better friend or ally under Reagan, and Ed Meese never had a more loyal colleague, especially when the long knives came out. When Ronald Reagan asked Ed Meese to become our 75th Attorney General, Ed set out to channel the course of American law toward renewed fidelity to the written Constitution. Republican presidents from Eisenhower forward had never managed to consistently select judges who would be faithful to the text of the Constitution. So that by the end of the Nixon and Ford administrations, there was only one Democrat in the liberal majority of the Warren Court, Thurgood Marshall. The other Democrat voted with us, Byron White. All these liberals in the Burger Court majorities had been appointed by Republican presidents. And the lower federal courts were full of the same kinds of hapless Republican appointees. So, President Reagan charged Ed Meese and his brains trust with restoring the rule of law under the written Constitution as opposed to the rule of men and women who were judges, and a fourfold effort was undertaken. First, the process of judicial selection was elevated to the highest levels of administration. This was unprecedented. The men who were Reagan's chief officers sat in the Roosevelt Room only a few steps from the Oval Office to make the final recommendations. Reagan himself then called every single judge personally, also unprecedented, to give these new judges or these nominees the sense of what was expected in terms of fidelity to the written Constitution. Second, Ed and his allies improved the predictability of judicial selection by taking advantage of the scholarship of Bob Bork and others who were writing in the 70s for the first time on the proper role of the judge. And instead of asking conclusory questions like, "Do you believe in judicial restraint?" or "Would you legislate from the bench?" I do think Republican prospective judges know the answer to those questions. The Reagan judge pickers put cases, what we call putting cases. They gave them sample fact situations saying, "How would you judge this?" not disclosing the outcome. And so analysis rather than slogans were put into effect so that there was more predictability on what you were getting when you made the appointments. Thus armed, Ronald Reagan transformed the federal judiciary. He appointed 50% of it by the time he was done. 385 appointments, more than Roosevelt in 12 years, including 83 appeals judges and four justices, counting Rehnquist. Third, a farm team was created by appointing young intellectuals from the conservative movement in the Department of Justice and to the federal bench. When Ed Meese asked me to do his transition for justice, he said, "Remember, Ken, I value gray hair." And I tried. And I went back to him. I said, "Ed, there's nobody with gray hair that agrees with us." So he appointed me and Brad. He said, "Okay, I'll go with no hair." But the point is, actually, that we appointed young people to these high offices of trust, and they showed up later. When you got to the George W. Bush list of a long list for the two vacancies under his regime, most of them, almost all of them, were Meese Justice Department types or Reagan appointments to the bench, including the two eventual justices. Fourth, And finally, Edmy sought to focus the legal culture on the question of the proper role of the judge under the Constitution by inaugurating what has been called the Great Debate. The debate eventually included Justices Brennan and Stevens, Robert Bork, Ronald Reagan himself, and you will recall some of the most prominent assertions of our side in that debate. The Constitution is a written document whose words were debated at length, carefully chosen, and therefore the framers' handiwork may be presumed to carry an identifiable meaning. The Constitution contains the means of its own amendment in Article 5, so we can conclude that the original meaning of its provisions control until amended. The Constitution itself, by its own terms, is the supreme law of the land, not the body of liberal interpretations that had grew up around it. The role of the judge is to issue a rule of decision in a case or controversy, and that rule of decision must interpret and apply law. That's important because, as Bob Bork put it, the choice that when the judge looks outside the law, he looks inside himself and nowhere else. The consequence of that choice is momentous because it answers the question, who governs America? And finally, the division of power against itself in the structure of the Constitution is its genius and the primary safeguard of our liberties. Therefore, the great structural doctrines of federalism and separation of powers must be revived. That was the debate. And of course, it's this last assertion that will occupy us for the rest of this meeting. Federalism and the other fundamental principles of the Constitution that I've just talked about found hospitality at the Meese Justice Department at a time when the legal academic establishment had barred its doors. 25 years later, we see the results all around us as the proponents of originalism are legion, and its opponents define themselves in contradistinction to the originalist position. Another 25 years from now, we'll celebrate the first quarter millennium of the Constitution. And a new generation of lovers of the law might hearken back to Ed Meese and the heroic debate that occurred in the 1980s on constitutional fidelity. They may be able to say that it was a turning place in the course of American law. At this remove, we can't say with certainty. But I believe that we can already be justly proud of the Herculean effort that Ed Meese has made on behalf of the blessings of liberty that our federal Constitution secures.